What's up, people? Thank you for checking out another episode of Morton's Law Podcast here on this May 22nd, 2022. Obviously, a lot going on. I say that all the time. A lot going on. No, there's nothing going on. Just nothing. But it's fun. I just came from the gym where I was working on my butt and taint because that's what I do. Most people work out back, tries, buys. I work on my butthole and taint more specifically. And it's like sweltering in there. It's like 75 degrees. I checked the thermostat. I'm like, can you guys do something about this heat? I mean, my butthole is already leaking. What's going on, people? So I had that experience. Then out of nowhere, I get a phone call yesterday from Jif. Yes, the peanut butter company. Telling me I need to be aware of something called salmonella, which was in their products, and that they have since recalled everything and are telling people to discard all of any products that is peanut butter related. Now, I bought the product roughly 6 weeks ago, maybe even a month, and I've already gone in ShopRite where I purchased the stuff. It comes in two jars, a two-jar package. I've already been through one jar. Now, according to the research I've done, well, people have told me, actually. I didn't care to look it up because I'm not dead, so whatever. But it's like apparently you can get some like explosive diarrhea, which I have normally anyway. Diarrhea, cha-cha-cha. I am the great Cornholio. I need TP for my bunghole. Are you threatening me? Settle down, Beavis. But yeah, so I mean, it's like I'm okay. And people are like, oh, you should throw out the jar that you have remaining. I'm like, no, nothing happened. I would be already sick in the hospital from the first jar. Of course, now that I jinx everything, I'll die, which is great. But okay, whatever. So, but salmonella, I looked it up and I found out what it is. And it's like, doesn't that sound like a mob boss or something? Like, hey, yo, salmonella's looking for you. Or if you call a bar and you just ask them, is Sal there? Yeah, salmonella? You know, that gag. That's funny. But I don't know. So as I was walking to the gym, this is funny. I don't know why to me it is, but whatever. I'm walking to the gym and I look over and there's this old gentleman walking towards me, probably 15, 20 years my senior. And he's wearing almost the identical thing I'm wearing, which is like basketball shorts, basketball shirt or just regular shirt in general, a hat. I don't have a hat on, but and sneakers. And I'm like, will I still be dressing like that when I'm 60? I don't know. I don't know if the guy just came from the basketball court, whatever, but it just made me think that could be possible. That you expect old people to wear certain things, not that. I'm coming back from the gym after going food shopping. And the neighborhood cat, which I didn't know if it belonged to anybody or not. I would see the cat on the side of where I live, and apparently the neighbors were feeding it. So I didn't know anything. Every time I see this cat, I'm just curious, is it homeless or whatever? So finally, I see the people outside that I've never met before. And I ask the woman as she's approaching me, is this your cat? And she says, yes, it is. We just let it go out whenever it wants. It has its freedom. And I was like, oh, okay. I was just wondering because you know, I was going to start feeding it. And all of a sudden, I don't know if this is her boyfriend, husband, whatever it is. He's on a phone. And all of a sudden, he sees me talking to this woman. And he gets off the phone and immediately comes running over and says, oh, yeah, that's our cat. That's our cat. And the way he talked to me, he made it sound like he thought I was going to steal the cat. Like, I just want to make sure it has a home. I wasn't looking to steal your cat. In fact, I don't steal that kind of pussy. Sorry. She wasn't my type. So Eric Adams in the news, as is former shithead mayor Bill de Blasio. So now, reportedly, Adams may make a run to run for the president. I'm like, didn't he just start as mayor? What is going on? I mean, has he proven anything in this city New York, that is, for those listening worldwide. Sometimes I think I'm talking to just a New York audience. I forget people nationwide and worldwide. And it's just comical to me. I mean, crime is still through the roof. Shootings every day. The most ridiculous stories you're hearing, like horrible homicides. Another subway shooting this afternoon, I believe, or in the morning, whenever. I'm sure one just happened now as I'm speaking. It's just like the gall of some people. It's like, are you kidding me? And then fucking clown show, de Blasio. By the way, I found out through a friend that Ringling Brothers, which had basically shut down, is now coming back. And if you ask me, the circus has never left the town that we live in because it's always some idiot running it. And de Blasio wants to run for Congress. Like, you were the worst mayor next to David Dinkins. I can't go before that, so I don't know anything past. When I was born, Mayor Koch was the guy. I couldn't tell you anything about him. I just know how bad Dinkins was. And de Blasio rivaled that, if not surpassed it, with ineptitude and just cluelessness. But I don't know. Adams, the jury's still out. I mean, he has a lot of mess to clean up, which de Blasio created. So I just don't know if he should be like, that's very ambitious of him to go, I'm going to run for president. Like, what? This guy's everywhere, though. So I just like, politicians are ponderous. They're just fucking ponderous. If I can quote Casey Kasem from the infamous dog death dedication audio that people may be privy to. But I'll tell you this, in terms of politicians, the difference between Republicans and Democrats is Republicans will tell you they're going to fuck you in the ass. And the Republicans are like, okay, give us more. We'll take it. We're good. We enjoy it. And Democrats will tell the people, we're going to fuck you in the ass. And the Democrats go, it's not so bad. It's just like, what? This is why I've gone more middle than ever before, because it's a fucking mess. A lot of men have this BS code. It's where you have to be like this biker type. You have to be in the military or, I don't know, stay with the girl you knocked up. You know, this ridiculous code. I don't subscribe to any of this tomfoolery. I just don't. I mean, you know, anything that risks your life and you're a real man to certain people. It's like all this daredevil stuff that women like, by the way, and a lot of men, especially those that wear uniforms. Now, I don't ride a motorcycle. I haven't been in the military, and I definitely don't stay with the girl I knocked up. Especially now with inflation. I mean, you know how much those fuckers will run you? But you know what does make me a real man? I ride the New York City subway system without a gas mask, bulletproof vest, or weapon. Yeah, think about that for a moment. So during the pandemic, I was doing open mics sporadically. And I told people this story because the open mics are just the 10 or 12 comedians in the Zoom. And people were horrified when I did my joke, which was this, that pre-pandemic, I worked with children coaching sports. And it's a really good job. I love it a lot. And to be honest with you, the main reason I still work with children is because they've been unable to prove that I raped them. Now, the room just went, like, people were like, what the fuck, Algie? And so, by the way, fast forward, pandemic, I still actually work with children. And speaking of which, this past week, the kids are playing dodgeball. And if you're not familiar with dodgeball rules, it is if you get hit in the head while you're upright, you are safe. If you duck when you get hit in the head, you're out. So one of the kids comes running up to me and says, Coach, I just got hit in the penis. Am I out? And I thought for a second, and I really wanted to say, well, that is your head. I mean, and then I wanted to ask him, did it duck? I don't know. But yeah, that's my life. So I get this email from WebMD recently. It says, 15 cancer symptoms you shouldn't ignore. Now, most people would read it. Some would even be concerned. Of course, I deleted it. Who cares? So, Morton's Law Podcast, We got some NBA playoffs coming up. AEW Dynamite on their bill to Double or Nothing. We got two WWE superstars who just walked out on Raw Monday night. And a lot more to get into. Again, Morton's Law Podcast coming back after this. Welcome back to Morton's Law Podcast. Don't forget to follow me on Twitter at Morton's _law. Don't forget also Morton's Law Podcast on Facebook. I have a group there, so you could join that if you want. And I'm getting a computer soon, and then I will be doing more videos. That is a goal to have over the summer that will come to fruition, I promise. So the NBA playoffs have been exciting, to say the least. A lot of fun. I mean, I'm still critical of the way they play sometimes, as you know. But I was shocked. Now, last week's episode, I had given you a prediction that the Phoenix Suns would win Game 7 against the Dallas Mavericks. Little did I know, as I was recording, the Suns were down 30 within that first half that you can't make up. It was like, what? The Suns are down 30? There was a score at one point where it was like 57-27. The Suns couldn't make a basket to save their lives. Chris Paul, Devin Booker, Ayton, everybody vanished. Very similar to how they did in the last four games, in the last 2 minutes against the Bucks in the finals. Just a complete vanish. I mean, if you remember, Suns led that series 2-0 going back to Milwaukee and then lost 4 straight. Now, I mean, Chris Paul now, what, at 37, couldn't win a ring again. Obviously, people are going to be critical and people are going to mock him, as certain people already have, about his inability to get it done. Look, he's 37. Now, I know he had that great closeout game in New Orleans, 14-for-14. But some people can get old overnight, not to mention the grueling aspect of the series. I mean, he went 6 in round 1, 7 in round 2. And the Mavs did some things to get him tired. And, hey, if Devin Booker isn't going to show up and help, well, they went home. And that was tough because, just like last year, I thought they were the best team. But they found a way to lose that series badly, I might add, in Game 7. I think that was probably the worst home court loss in the playoffs. Certainly in a Game 7. I mean, it's mind-blowing how they couldn't score. So now we move forward, and we have the Warriors now up 2-0 on the Mavericks. Game 3 is about to tip off in 2 hours or so, as I record on this Sunday evening. And the Warriors, they were down 14 at the half, 72-58 Game 2. Mavericks figured stuff out. Luka, everyone got involved. I mean, that's the key. Luka's going to get his. Will he get help? In Game 7 of the previous series, Dinwiddie went off. Now, he needs guys like that and Brunson and Finney-Smith to hit their shots when they get them. Home court has been great to them. They're 3-0. Actually, probably more than that, going back to the first round. Excuse me. I forgot about the first round. I know we're in the conference finals already. But a lot of people are high on the Mavericks to make this an interesting series. Obviously, you have to win tonight or at 3-0. No one's going to believe in them because, as you know, no one has come back in the NBA playoffs from a 3-0 deficit. Now, the key is, how do they contain the Warriors? Because that second half the other day, the Warriors just went crazy. It was a combination of Poole. I mean, Curry got his in the fourth. Thompson, even Andrew Wiggins stepped in, had some good play. He was better actually in Game 1. But listen, I said it and I'll say it again. The Warriors have shown glimpses of being great, of being the team that they were in yesteryear, the team that has won multiple rings. But then they also show you that they can lose by 50, or at least trail by 50, as they did in Memphis in Game 5. I don't know which Warriors team will show up tonight. I'm leaning towards the Mavs to make it a 2-1 series, so that's my thought for tonight. I mean, Luka probably will go off and they'll get the help. The crowd will be into the game. Place will be electric. I'm sure Jason Kidd is going to make some adjustments. I mean, as he did in the first half, but then Steve Kerr countered with his adjustments. And obviously, it's a chess match. Steve Kerr's been there before. Jason Kidd learning as he goes. So the other series has been just shocking on so many different levels. First of all, you have the injuries, the slew of injuries in which guys miss games. Talking about the Bucks and Celtics, you don't know who's going to play on any given night. I mean, we've had so many guys out, like Kyle Lowry missed, of course, the first two games. Then you had Robert Williams miss game three. Of course, Al Horford and Marcus Smart missed game one. So, I mean, it's been like blowout city either way. I mean, Miami dominated game one. Boston came back and just destroyed them in game two. I mean, that wasn't even close. And game three, Miami, with Lowry in the lineup, I mean, they looked amazing in that first 6 minutes of the game where they just went up by 15 right out of the gate. Just great passing. Lowry gets Adebayo involved, where Jimmy Butler tries to, but the offense doesn't run through Adebayo more when Jimmy has the ball in his hands. So Adebayo will end up with it with a few seconds left and just pass off. Because Adebayo is not aggressive. But in game three, Spoelstra probably said, hey, listen, you have to score tonight. We need you to score because Tyler Hero has been MIA. So you got to get some production offensively somewhere. Lowry could only play so much, limited with his injuries and age. But Adebayo stepped up big time last night. The Celtics couldn't guard him. And there were multiple situations last night. By the way, I really want to go Instagram Live at some point and watch the game. And maybe you guys can watch me watch it. And I can comment on what happens. Because, and I'm not tooting my own horn here. I'm not patting myself on the back. You know, you guys know I used to coach college basketball. I wish. I used to coach youth basketball. So I have experience in that aspect. But just knowledge of the game. And as I'm watching that game last night, there were multiple incidents in which I said, this guy took a bad shot, or this guy had a poor defensive effort. And I kid you not, at least five times, if not more, Van Gundy and Mark Jackson repeated almost verbatim what I had said. So it's just fun to watch the game and be able to point out certain things. And these two ex-coaches, Jackson soon to be coaching again, have that same thought process. Because with Adebayo, when he catches the ball, even with his back to the basket, he has to inside pivot and then face up. And from that position, he can face up. And obviously, he has a height advantage over a lot of the Celtics that will guard him, specifically Marcus Smart. And he could just rise up and shoot that jumper, which he did at one point in the game. And I went, bingo, that's what he needs to do. Because when you get in that triple threat position off your inside pivot, you can now head fake, you can jab step, you can make the defender move. Because if a defender doesn't move, well, then it's easier for them to guard you. So you have to have many ways to be on the attack. And too many times in that game, even in the second quarter, a little bit of the third, when the Celtics made their run, they were down by 20-ish. Or even more, it was 25, I think. When the Celtics made their run in the third quarter prior to, well, we'll talk about the injuries more in a second, but Adebayo became passive again. And obviously the Celtics made some minor adjustments, but at the end of the day, even if you're showing Adebayo a second guy, which was the case on one catch, he caught the ball, Horford was there, then I think Marcus Smart came over, or maybe vice versa. I forget who was guarding him in that possession. But even then, okay, well, then don't show your drive. Square up and just shoot. Because Adebayo can make the 20-foot shot. It's in his arsenal. He has it, and he showed it last night. So no matter what look the Celtics give him, he gets into more trouble when he puts the ball on the floor, and then they converge as a defense, and perhaps he'll turn the ball over or just get it out of it. I mean, look, one-on-one, he can beat Horford off the dribble. That's just easy for him. That's cake. Horford's 36, 37. But then the help comes, and then he gets in trouble. But they need to go more isolation and just get him the ball. And now with Butler, as I'll get into, he didn't show up for the third quarter. I jumped in the shower. I come out, and I hear them saying, Jimmy Butler's done for the game. I was like, you got to be kidding me. Now, you guys know I'm the biggest Jimmy Butler fan there is. I still wish he were in Chicago. I hate the fact the Bulls found a way to trade him. It makes me sick. I won't go down that path because that's another conversation. But his injury must be severe for him not to be on the court. That's got to be serious, because I would never question his mentality, his toughness, his stick-to-itiveness. I mean, all those things, his grit. Jimmy Butler wants to be on the court and wants to win more than anybody, I think, in the league. I mean, there's a few other guys, of course. I'm not going to dismiss that. But I may have said this on the show in the past. I'll say it again. I was listening to Colin Cowherd, and he was talking about how he interviewed one of these NBA insiders. And that person said that they feel 3% of the league, think about how many players are in the league, 3% of the league are committed to winning. Jimmy Butler is definitely on that list. So that just shocked me. He couldn't play. But again, when the Celtics made that run, they cut the lead to 9. Kyle Lowry made big shots. Struce, the guy who always say, how is he in the starting lineup? Duncan Robinson's living on the bench now as a result of his inability to score and defensive ineptitude, just like Hero also. So Struce stepped up, had some big threes to quiet the crowd when the Celtics made their run. And then you had the injuries on the Celtics side. You have Marcus Smart, who rolled his ankle. It was a horrible roll. It looked like, I mean, when he went back, he's being held back. You're thinking he's done. Game, no chance. And then I guess they have Mr. Miyagi in the background. I don't know what the... And then just boom, he's back. And Marcus Smart is going to play. And then the same thing happens with Jason Tatum. He goes down, shoulder. And he goes to the back. Oh no, what's the extent of it? Here comes Jason Tatum, Mr. Miyagi again. Boom, on the court. So, but here's the thing. When those guys came back, the Celtics were down, what, 4 or 5? I forget how close it got. Pardon me not remembering, but the Heat just made key basket after key basket. Adebayo had a basket where somebody was draped all over him as the shot clock was winding down. It was like a 15-footer, and he nailed it. I mean, that right there probably was the clincher, because at the end, then you had a, I mean, look, the last, what, 40 seconds or minute took 3 hours, because they had review after review. You had a technical foul in Marcus Smart arguing. Then you had a review for a flagrant foul, which happened. So that was a wild finish. But the Heat go up 2-1, game 4 Monday. Still, I guess, I haven't done any reading, so pardon me if I don't know in terms of guys' status for that game. But this is a crazy series. And, I mean, I hope everybody's back. So we'll see what happens in that. But, I mean, I would be shocked if the Celtics did not win game 4 and go back to Miami 2-2. But Miami showed grit. They showed something without Butler that I didn't think they had in them. And there's where that's the X factor is Adebayo, how big he can be in game 4. All right, so the Yankees and the Mets are still in first place. The Mets, unfortunately, got some bad news. Max Scherzer, 37 years old. We talk about age in sports. And, I mean, the Mets made this risk to sign him for, I believe, a 3-year deal. And now he's hurt already. And 6 to 8 weeks, which, you know, in Mets terms is at least past the All-Star break. I mean, minimum, probably August. I mean, look, if they can sustain with the pitching, as has been the case. I mean, they even went into Colorado and they just dominated pitching staff, aside from that one game yesterday. But they are, I mean, everyone who steps on that mound is capable of winning a game. And now they're going to bring Peterson back up. He's going to start on Tuesday, I believe. So the Mets are in a good position. And the Yankees actually just lost game 1 of their doubleheader, which was a joke, by the way. There was even a doubleheader Friday night. There were thunderstorms in the forecast. And you know, as we approach summer, thunderstorms don't last long. It wasn't going to rain all night. I don't know how the meteorologists didn't see this. And I don't know how the game got postponed, because doubleheaders are still not easy. I know, thank God, they're no longer 7 innings, by the way. And they're back to 9. But with that said, Yankees lost 3-1. Chapman came in the 9th, gave up some hits. Now the question mark is Chapman still Chapman? Obviously, look, he's up there in age now. He's not young anymore. The velocity is coming down. And as they were talking during the broadcast, is Chapman done as the closer? Well, he'll get more opportunities, but Yankees may have to go in a different direction and just hope he can bring it back at some point in the season. But the one thing that stood out and always stands out when you listen to a Yankee broadcast, Michael Kay still sucks. He's the worst. He's the absolute worst. I kid you not, within minutes of listening to the broadcast, he made a mistake, to no surprise. Lance Hedrick's on the mound, the White Sox closer, and out of nowhere, I don't know what kind of brain fart he could have had, but he called him Chapman, and then goes, Hendricks. Like, what? What are you doing? I don't know. He just, listen, nobody's perfect. I get that, but still, he sucks. So that wraps up sports, and we're going to come back on the other side and talk pro wrestling. Morton's Law Podcast, back after this. Tune in every Monday night at 10 p.m. for the Absolute Truth Show on Blog Talk Radio. Join the Hot Rod, Sean Black, and Lady T as they give you the truth on current events, politics, and everything in between. That's Monday nights at 10 p.m. on blogtalkradio.com/theabsolutetruth100, where they tell it like it is. Welcome back to Morton's Law Podcast for this final segment here as we talk pro wrestling. Major news broke on Monday night. I know I'm talking about it late, so you've probably heard every different take on the planet by now. But Naomi and Sasha Banks walked out of Raw after being told, in terms of creative, what they would be doing on that night. And it's just a wild story. And since then, apparently, like, both parties have removed all affiliation. I mean, the Twitter handles have been changed. They've been removed from not only the opening of shows, but also on the websites. It's just wild. They were stripped of the tag titles. Announcement made by Michael Cole on SmackDown, of course, stripping them of the titles. Now, reportedly, again, take all this news with a grain of salt because there's numerous people reporting and whatever, that they were both unhappy with creative. Reportedly, Naomi was going to win that six-pack challenge on Raw, but then lose to champion Bianca Belair. And also, Sasha would then challenge and lose to Ronda Rousey. Again, all reported. I don't know how true any of this is. But Sasha and Naomi, they felt them losing singles matches would then hurt the credibility of their tag team titles, which is a point. However, as you know in their history, more specifically the last 20 years, Vince McMahon has done everything in his power to make the tag team titles look meaningless. Just like the Intercontinental title, the United States title, have been worthless. Some don't even appear on pay-per-views. They don't even get the dark match or the pre-show match, whatever you want to call it. They don't care about tag team wrestling. So while they did what they did to stand up for themselves in creative, by the way, more news has broken, again, reportedly, that the contract status of both women are as such that within 2 months, again, reported, that they could be done. And I don't know if they're, obviously, WWE is going to try to negotiate, although does Vince care? Does Vince want them? I mean, we've seen people show up on AEW ready, like Toni Storm has been mentioned in an article I read earlier. So what does Vince think about? What does he care? And you know, listen, when you're a contracted wrestler, unless you have creative control, which nobody does, I'm the last person who had it was probably Hulk Hogan and WCW. I don't know what wrestler, I don't know. I don't think Roman Reigns or John Cena or anybody in the last 10 years has had creative control. But when you're asked to do a job, I don't know. I mean, can you just take your ball and go home? Listen, you know what the tag team title picture. I mean, look at the Usos. The Usos are Roman's flunkies. Now, I mean, look at how they act sometimes. They act like, I mean, could you imagine for those fans of New Japan Pro Wrestling, could you imagine Tama Tonga or Tangaloa acting the way the Usos do sometimes, looking like, as they call, bitches? I mean, it's like, no, Jay and Mark Briscoe acting like that? No, I mean, they do a job because they get paid, they're under contract. So unfortunately, people are asked to do things they don't like to do. And hey, there's another company now. You can go work for that company. They could sit at home for the next 2 months. We're done. And here we are. Tony Khan should jump at Sasha Banks without question. Or Mercedes, as we've already seen online, that she's all elite. And, you know, Naomi's okay, but Sasha's the draw. But hey, listen. You could look at it from either side. You're there to do a job, or you take your ball and go home. And that's the luxury of having AEW. So, I don't know. What do you think? Let me know. So, AEW Dynamite Wednesday night. I think they were back in Texas. As they build towards Double or Nothing. The show kicks off with a quarterfinal matchup of the Owen Hart Foundation Tournament. We get ROH television champion Samoa Joe is first out. His opponent is the Joker. No, not Seth Rollins. No, no. That was one of the things I put on Twitter. If you follow me at Morton's _ law, saying Seth Rollins. I mean, we talk about a forbidden door. But that would have been funny. So, no. And again, with speculation on the internet, who the Joker would be, people suggested Killer Cross, Johnny Gargano. And now we didn't get Gargano, but we got a different Johnny. And that Johnny was Johnny Elite now, formerly known as John Morrison, Johnny Nitro, Johnny Mundo for those Lucha Underground people. So yeah, he was there. He comes out. Crowd gave him a nice ovation. Wasn't a resounding, because I think they really wanted Gargano. But I mean, look, he's a quality worker. No one's ever taken shots at his work. I mean, look, when you look at his ring work in Lucha Underground, you get to see more of it. Although a lot of it, as people say, has been heavily edited over, you know, with their production. But I'm a fan of his work, and he and Joe had a decent match. It was okay. I mean, it was a sloppy 450 where Joe wasn't in the right position. I don't know who's to blame there. I don't know, whoever. I mean, whatever. Joe was going to go for the muscle buster. He avoided it, and there was some exchange, and then eventually he missed his splash, and then Joe eventually hit the muscle buster for the win. Then we get to see Hangman versus Kensuke Takeshita, which sounds like take a shit. And Punk is on commentary. This match was really good. This match was better than I thought it would be. Takeshita is exciting to watch. He hits his moves with precision. His moves matter. His timing, his everything about this guy makes you interested in him. Some guys come over from Japan, you're like, ah, whatever, blah. You know what I mean? A lot of that strong style stuff you get. But here you got to see a guy who could really go and work and sell, more importantly than anything. As I watch this match, I look over and I see certain spots that they did. I don't have them in front of me, so I don't remember. But when you see certain spots as the match goes on, guys are supposed to stay down longer to make it matter. Obviously, they're tired now as the match goes on. Stay down longer. And they did that. Even Paige had a good match here. Now, you could argue it went too long because Paige is the World Heavyweight Champion. I mean, should he be in the ring with this guy, Takeshita, for more than, what did they go, 12 or 15 minutes? Whatever. I'm not going to go crazy about it. So then, just like Punk did last week when he was in the ring and Paige was on commentary and he did the buckshot lariat, this time around, we get Paige doing the one-up and he uses the GTS to pin Takeshita. So, and of course, Punk was on commentary smiling. But, I mean, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. That match at Double or Nothing. It's intriguing where they go in terms of who's going to... I mean, look, the majority feel Punk is going to win. But then there's that caveat. You're like, okay, well, when is Kenny Omega due back? As we saw from, I don't know, what pay-per-view was that? Where Callis came out and he just brought up Kenny Omega. Like, people forgot about him. And... you know, the history that he has with Hangman Page, obviously tag team champions, lost the title to him. However, could he come out to help Page? Could they screw Punk as a tandem? Or could he screw Page and Punk wins the title that way? There's so many different avenues they could go with this match. And with a screwy finish, I mean, to go clean is different. I don't know if you want to beat Hangman clean like that. If they beat him at all, we'll see. There's a lot of backstage awkwardness in AEW. Sometimes it's just really cringe. And more specifically, not to take a shot at the women's division, but a lot of those segments are involving their women who just have no idea how to talk or get anything over and just sound like it make you want to care about anything is more specifically. So we get Red Velvet and Chris Statlander, who now has pretty much lost the alien gimmick entirely. And I mean, just some things should not be on TV. And this was a segment that eventually had to a Jade Cargo come out. And now she has this catchphrase, "Tony, cut the shit." It's just like, it was so bad, if you know the segment I'm talking about, and the back and forth, how Velvet said, "We used to be buddies, but now I'm a baddie." It's just horrible. It's horrible. It's absolute shit. So next segment we get, and this was fun. This was a lot of fun because Wardlow made this segment. I mean, MJF is great too, no doubt about it. But Wardlow's facials during this 10 lashes as he's getting hit, and then eventually one of the lashes actually hurts him and he sells it. And then Spears comes in, and of course MJF is throwing a tantrum because he's not hurting him as much as he thought he would hurt him. And it's just so well done, this segment. Loved it tremendously. But of course, they low blow Wardlow and beat him up after. And then Wardlow just goes crazy again and just destroys everyone. Mr. Mayhem, as they call him, lived up to the moniker. So that was good. I mean, that match is going to be, again, what finish do you go with? And we talk about the online speculation of MJF's contract. And when it does come up, I think they said 23 at some point. We're going to find out as we go forward here what they view MJF and the chances of him actually leaving. Of course, we saw Cody go. Cody left. Could MJF go? Is any of this a work that we're getting online with his banter about wanting to go to WWE or feeling less valued in AEW and all such? We don't know. I don't want to be naive and say it can't be a work. It could. But we're going to find that out in the future with how he's booked. Does he beat Wardlow? Does he lose? If he ever lost clean, then you know there's something up. I mean, there's got to be some kind of screw finish in this match, because I don't want to beat either guy clean. So that's a hard part to book. And I've always told you that booking is not easy. It's just like, okay, well, how do we beat this guy? But I mean, you know, it's plausible he could go to WWE. Why not? In fact, I have a great scenario. Now, if he leaves in 23, the match would probably have happened by now, the way WWE's building. Unless we do get Roman versus The Rock, which of course is highly speculated at WrestleMania next year. With then, I don't know what they're going to do with Cody, because Cody's hot right now. So how are you going to feed Cody to Roman pre-Rock? Or do you wait on Cody and say, okay, well, we do want Cody to be the one that dethrones Roman, but we're going to now wait to next year. So what do you give Cody in the interim? Aside Seth Rollins, which needs to end at some point, right? I mean, how many times can we see that? So I don't know what you do with Cody. Do you give him a secondary title? Do you make a title mean more by putting it on him? You could with the Intercontinental title or the United States title. Have him build that title up over the course of a year. And then, as we build towards after Roman beats The Rock, which most people say should happen, and then we can build towards Cody and Roman. And around that time would then be 23 when MJF's contract is up. And then if we ever got that match at WrestleMania, how amazing would it be in terms of storytelling if MJF screwed Cody in the main event at WrestleMania and it cost him against Roman Reigns? How fucking amazing would that be? If in his debut, he fucks Cody over and that's how he loses the match. That would be great. That would be great. That would be a pop for many fans. So, yeah, let's see if that happens. Next up, we get Swerve and Keith Lee. The only reason I'm mentioning this, because again, I've said it in the past, but it's really funny to me. And against Kevin Owens 10 years from now and Anthony Henry. I mean, seriously, doesn't JD Drake look like an old Kevin Owens? Like, look at this guy's face. He looks old as fuck. Gray hair, everything. I don't know, maybe they were separated at birth in time intervals or the multiverse. Crazy. So we get Kyle O'Reilly beat Phoenix in an okay match. Nothing great, but it was good. And he's going to face Samoa Joe next week to determine who faces Adam Cole. Spoiler ahead of time, but I'll get back to that match in a second. I mean, with the Jay Lethal, Sanjay Dutt, and Satnam Singh angle, could they cost Joe next week? Could we get Kyle O'Reilly against Adam Cole at Double or Nothing? Does Tony Khan want to do that? Does he want to revisit the match that we got in NXT with them feuding? My guess is no. I do think we're going to get Joe against Cole, but then you could do that screwy finish again. Again, every match ends in some screw job, which sounds like bad booking, and it is, but at the same time, when you have all these people that are over, how do you beat somebody? You got to beat somebody some way, somehow. So that's the hard part. So my thought is perhaps Lethal and his people cost Joe the match against Cole Double or Nothing. That could happen. Now, moving along, if you thought the backstage segment, the aforementioned segment with Serena Deeb and Chris Statlander was bad, I mean, this segment was painful. You get Shivani in the ring with Serena Deeb. She calls out Dustin Rhodes. She talks about her career, all the mountains she had to overcome and the climb and everything and the hard work and having to shave her head and then Dustin. And I mean, here's the thing. It was cringe to me because if you listen to the crowd, they were trying their hardest to be respectful, but you could hear the impatience growing. Like, they wanted nothing to do with this segment. They thought this was crap. And, like, look, so far, if you ask me, Serena on the mic has been an epic fail. And listen, even if you think she's good on the mic and the way this storyline is playing out, you like it as an individual, the crowd, you cannot deny that their fan base is not responding to her on a mic. And it's just falling flat. Listen, segments fall flat. It is what it is. This one fell flat again. And then, of course, Thunder Rosa comes out and they do what they do. But that match at Double or Nothing, I mean, it'll be good. It's going to be a good wrestling match. But I would be shocked if Serena Deeb won. I don't know. Next, we have Dr. Britt Baker against the Women's Joker. I don't know if speculation. See, my thought was when I saw John Morrison, Johnny Elite now, I thought, wow, so the Women's Joker is going to be Ty Valkyrie, his wife. That would have been awesome. So I turned it on because I went to the gym. I came back, and you know, you guys know I stream everything. So I go up, and I was like anticipating how awesome it would be if Ty Valkyrie came out, and it wasn't her. It was Maki Ito. And whatever, Maki Ito is okay. I'm not gonna dump on her, but I didn't care. Now, the match wasn't long enough to be bad, which is good. I mean, thank God, right? But apparently Maki Ito has the hardest head in the business since JYD, so she could just keep banging her head into the turnbuckle as she did in this match 300 times, but she eventually fell victim to the, I forget what Britt Baker calls that, mandible claw. I should know that, sorry. So then we get Cole against Hardy in the main event. It's becoming hard to watch Jeff Hardy just because he can't move at the same speed he once did, obviously in his advanced age now. And I'm not saying he's bad in the ring, but it's just not the same Jeff Hardy. So you're like, this is just okay, because we know he has been better. His body is broken down. He's a shell of himself. And Cole had I hate to use the word carry, because that's stupid. People like Mark used the word, he carried a match. No, I mean, that's not fair to Hardy, but it's just not as good as he could have been in the past. So I think Tony Khan is now clearly building Cole up again after tearing him down or at least putting him in the position he was in to lose twice to Hangman Page, just to build him up first. And now you get this, where Cole has now won consecutive matches without a screwjob finish. He went clean over Dax, and he goes clean over Jeff. So that's good for Cole, and I mean, I don't know, I'm inclined to believe they'll go Cole to win over Samoa Joe, like I said, with that finish involving Lethal and his people. But that would be a good match. I mean, yeah, Samoa Joe against Cole should be tremendous. That's think about it. That's on a pay-per-view. That's going to be freaking amazing. And then we did learn, by the way, I had written it down somewhere. I'm trying to remember where it is. But one cool segment on the show, not segment, but backstage, we got Roppongi Vice announcing that they're back together full-time and that they challenge FTR to the ROH Tag Team titles. Now, that would be cool to add to Double or Nothing. That would be a classic. Beretta and Rocky Romero against FTR. Sign me up any day of the week for that match. That would be great. And the ratings went back up after a little bit of a tumble. It wasn't drastically down. It was back into the 800,000s. Listen, they're against the NHL. They're against the NBA. But now the numbers have come back on back-to-back weeks. And I believe it was at 930 or 922 maybe. But yeah, impressive numbers, AEW. Doing a good job keeping those people. And they, as they build, listen, the go-home show, let's hope they could get back to a million for that, which is, of course, this coming Wednesday with the pay-per-view around the corner on Sunday. So, yeah, that wraps up another edition of Morton's Law Podcast. I thank everybody out there who does listen to the show. It was fun. And take care, everybody. God bless. Gay sex.